Breaking now on the Mike Gallagher Show.
Well, the Department of Homeland Security has issued a sweeping set of orders today that implement President Trump's plan to increase illegal immigration enforcement. The memos from Homeland Security instruct all agents, including Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to identify, capture, and quickly deport every illegal they encounter. The memos require illegals caught entering the country to be placed in detention until their cases are resolved. The memos increase the ability of local police to help in immigration enforcement, calling for the hiring of 10,000 more immigration agents and allow planning to begin on the expansion of the border wall between the United States and Mexico. Well, here we go again with another example of a president fulfilling his campaign promise. That's kind of novel, isn't it? Joel Pollack's newest book with Larry Schweikert is How Trump Won, the Inside Story of a Revolution. I'd submit to you that this story about these sweeping new plans to crack down on illegals is a big reason why he ran and won. It was the foundation of his campaign. Joel is senior editor-at-large for Breitbart News, and he joins us once again here on our guest line on the Mike Gallagher Show. Joel, welcome back. How have you been?
Wow, I got the Steve Miller Band intro. That was pretty cool.
Well, nothing but the best for you, my friend. Nothing but the best. And of course, you know, as senior editor-at-large for Breitbart, I'm sorry we can't even begin with the immigration news and your splendid new book, How Trump Won, without talking about CPAC and, of course, the controversy involving Milo Yiannopoulos. You want to weigh in on that, or would you rather leave it alone?
I don't really have anything to say about it other than, you know, God tests people in different ways, and Psalm 31 sort of says it all. Mm-hmm. So not much to say. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, what's unfortunate to me, as much of a lightning rod as he is, now the people who rioted at Berkeley and the people who think they can stop somebody from speaking by committing acts of violence are going to feel empowered, and they're going to ramp up their efforts.
Well, we're still here, and we will fight those people as hard as we have ever fought them before.
Sure.
I think that the people that the riots actually hurt are Democrats. When you see people showing up around the country on President's Day, for example,
yep,
having these Not My President's Day rallies,
yep,
and you know, there is this kind of expectation on the left and also in the mainstream media. I see that NBC News had a story on President's Day. Because Trump has lasted 32 days in office, he's no longer going to be the shortest president in history.
I mean, it was a stunning story from NBC. Now, when Trump lashes out at fake news, this is precisely what he's talking about. And you know, people clutch their pearls and they act all shocked and offended on behalf of the First Amendment. Are you kidding me with that kind of nonsense?
They have been going on, they being the mainstream media, NBC, CNN. I can cite stories like that. I can give specific examples if you want. But they have gone on since before he was inaugurated with stories about how he would not take office, how he would drop out, how he would be assassinated in the case of a CNN story, how he would be impeached, how he would quit. The media have a default assumption that he is not going to be the president, and this is more than a month now into his presidency. So they're really – look, they're Democrats with pens and pads, and – they're hurting themselves because this perpetual expectation that he's somehow going to go away means that Democrats aren't connecting to the voters they lost in November, the voters who turned up in many counties that voted for Obama to vote for Trump. And they're not getting what his appeal is to people. They're not listening to their own voters telling them that they need to change, instead of which they're locked in this fantasy that unfortunately is going to continue. In 2018, next year, Democrats have got more than two dozen Senate seats up, and 10 of those are in states that Trump won,
right,
whereas Republicans only have 8 Senate seats up. So he could do a spectacularly awful job and still come back with Republicans holding Congress. So they're in a real sticky situation. They need to rethink their priorities. They need to listen to the voters, instead of which they and their friends in the media are locked into this crazy fantasy that the election didn't actually happen and that they'll click their ruby slippers three times and end up back where they started.
Or march around with a sandwich board and think that's going to change anything. Because, you know, newsflash, it's not. It's not going to move the needle. You want to march around and protest. And listen, I'm a firm believer. You want to protest peacefully? Knock yourself out. Put signs in your windows. Whatever you do, whatever you need to do to make yourself feel better, just understand, A, it doesn't matter. It's not going to change anything because this freight train is going to continue. But Joel Pollack, let's acknowledge something here. It's not just Democrats and far left activists who are the president's opponents. How about a sitting U.S. senator going to Germany? You mentioned the assassination threat that, of course, President Trump has to hear every day. How about what John McCain said this week, the other day in Russia? Let's listen together.
We cannot give up on ourselves and on each other. That is the definition of decadence. What would von Kleist's generation say if they saw our world today? I fear that much about it would be all too familiar for them.
What would von Kleist, now you had to look this up, von Kleist, oh, you mean the guy that was part of a plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler? Why in God's name do you think John McCain would bring that up while trashing President Trump from Germany?
John McCain should give that same speech in the United States. I think he should have the courage to stand up and tell Americans all the things he was brave enough to tell the Europeans and that he's bold enough to tell reporters in the corridors of the Capitol. He should give a speech in Arizona and tell his fellow citizens, people who sent him to Congress, all the things he said, and see how they react and put that view to them rather than explaining it to people who are already skeptical of any American president overseas. I think it was really something not done. He didn't do that, as I recall, when Obama was president, didn't go abroad and trash the president. You just don't do that. Politics stops at the water's edge. It was a frequent complaint that Obama didn't obey that rule, that he went overseas and said all kinds of things about America. That set a bad precedent. I think that McCain made a mistake. I believe people can apologize for and correct mistakes, and I think he ought to do that. If he's got those kinds of views, he should share them here and have them debated here. But to go overseas and say those kinds of things, all it does is reinforce bad impressions of the United States. And keep in mind, when people get their international news abroad about the United States, they're often watching networks like CNN. So they're getting a left-wing view. They're getting a skewed view of how Americans feel. And when you have our senators going over and saying similar things, including senators from the Republican Party, the president's own party, it hurts our ability to project friendship to our allies and to project strength to our enemies.
But it was really, really despicable, and I'm still so very angry about it, as I know millions and millions of Americans are as well. And I just think it's laughable to see all this righteous indignation about President Trump taking on what he calls the fake news media. I saw a column this morning, Kirsten Powers, who's a Democrat, liberal Democrat, used to be on Fox News. Now she's on CNN. She pointed out that, remember how Obama's White House trained its sights on the media outlet that was giving it heartburn, Fox News, and proclaimed Fox News an opponent? White House Communications Chief Anita Dunn told CNN in 2009, let's not pretend Fox News is a news network let's not pretend Fox News is a news network the way CNN is. They blocked Chris Wallace out of a round of interviews. Dan Pfeiffer told the New York Times, we simply decided to stop abiding by the fiction that Fox News is a traditional news organization. I mean, on and on. This is nothing different from what Obama was doing with media outlets that he didn't like. And when Trump does it, it's the end of the world. And we all have to start hyperventilating about the First Amendment. Are you kidding me, Joel?
Well, the interesting thing about Trump is that even the news outlets and the journalists he has criticized, he has then given access to. I mean, he skipped over Jim Acosta of CNN, for example, in a press conference before the inauguration. And then during his first press conference last week, he went right back to Jim Acosta and let him ask three questions. So this is a way of Trump expressing his opinion about the news media and his criticisms, but it's also pretty clear he doesn't hold a grudge for very long, and he's willing to sit down even with people who published fake news stories. Zeke Miller for example, published that awful story about the Martin Luther King Jr. bus disappearing, which never happened.
Right.
He apologized for it. And then last week you have White House officials sitting down with Zeke Miller and giving an interview to Time magazine. So it's not as if you can point to any concrete way in which the media has been disadvantaged by Trump's criticisms. One of the reasons the rest of the country is basically shrugging at what Trump is saying is because people feel the media are against them. And maybe they wouldn't say it the way President Trump does, but when, again, you have CNN broadcasting a story about what happens if Trump is assassinated before he takes office, as if this is a meaningful possibility. Or you have all these stories on NBC about, wow, isn't it amazing Trump's lasted this long? I mean, they're basically rejecting the choice of the American electorate. And in that sense, they're not acting as news organizations. They're acting as the opposition party vis-a-vis the president, first of all. And secondly, as an opponent of the American people in the political sense. I mean, they're basically saying to the electorate, sure, you made a mistake and we're here to help you undo it. But that's not really an appropriate role for a news organization to play.
Joel Pollack, Breitbart News Senior Editor at Large with us. New book, How Trump Won, The Inside Story of a Revolution. I'm about halfway through the book. I love the part about you write about how the Clinton team realized they had lost before Team Trump knew they won. I remembered distinctly a story in the New York Post 2 or 3 days before the election that she had ordered fireworks to be shot off by the Hudson River near the Javits Center where Hillary was going to have her big victory party. And they canceled the fireworks very quietly. They pulled the permits that they had obtained for the fireworks. And I remember thinking, uh-oh, do they know something we don't know?
Yeah, you know, I think there was a realization among some in the Clinton camp that either she was going to lose or that she stood a chance of losing. And I think the James Comey letter reopening the investigation was in some ways a sign that she could lose. I don't think it convinced anybody to switch their vote from Clinton to Trump, but I do think that that reopening of the investigation consolidated Republican support around Trump, and I think that the smarter Democrats realized that their candidate had not spent any time in these blue states that she needed to hold. And right up until Election Day, it wasn't clear to the Trump people that he was going to win any of those states, and certainly they had strategies to do that. And you can talk to some of the people in the Trump campaign and they'll tell you they were confident. But I talked to pollsters who were there right up until the end, and some of them said to me, you know, we've got to win these borderline states, these swing states.
Yep.
and didn't think they had a chance behind that blue wall. But Trump, I think, and some of the people around him were confident that they could do it. I was skeptical that they would do it, but I always knew there was a chance. But certainly among Democrats, among the more seasoned Democrats, I don't think the result was as much of a surprise as it turned out to be for the rest of the country.
It's a great read. I hope everybody gets your book, How Trump Won, The Inside Story of a Revolution by Joel Pollack, Larry Schweikert. Joel, keep fighting the good fight. I look forward to seeing you at CPAC.
See you there.